Right, it's Monday. It's time for the Mountain Bike Podcast presented by GMBN. And it is the 30th of September. Did you have a good weekend, Henry?
Yeah, I had a pretty good weekend, actually.
What did you get up to?
I rode my bike a lot. I spent probably more time cleaning mountain biking equipment than I did in mountain biking stuff. But it was worth it. It was pretty good.
Same, same.
How about you, yeah?
Yeah, lots of riding, lots of muddy equipment. Did you watch any of the racing? There's lots of racing, actually. There was the main one, obviously, is the mountain biking, the Trophy of Nations.
Yep.
But also, I watched a bit of the road cycling world championships.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Both seemed really good. I mean, I think the EWS is in that sticky situation of how to televise it at the moment. You know, I often do follow the live feeds, but I was out riding, so I just saw the results and looking forward to the highlights video,
yeah,
which are normally actually really good. But the road race,
it's really well televised, obviously. It's a huge sport. I watched the very start, the mid part probably of the women's race, mm-hmm. and I forget her name. I am a very casual road cycling fan, but the Dutch lady set off.
Yeah.
On that hill with 105k to go, and I was like, and then I went for a ride, and I caught up at the end. She rode away the whole race.
Incredible.
In crazy weather as well.
So I think she's got world time trial championships in the past.
And that was the lady that was winning the Olympics and then had a massive crash into that ditch and walloped her head.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Oof.
So yeah, it was cool.
Nasty.
It was great. Obviously, that was in Harrogate in the UK, so it was pretty big news over here in the UK the weekend.
Yeah, it was cool for me as well watching the juniors, because a guy I did a lot of training with in Queenstown was at his first junior world champs.
The guy who won got DQ'd.
He did get DQ'd.
For getting towed.
I couldn't, but everyone was getting towed.
It was all up in arms. Everyone, apparently, you would go on Twitter, which I do go for my news, and there was the fans were saying, oh, this is terrible. Oh, no, I've seen the video. He should definitely have been disqualified now. I totally agree. Mm-hmm. And then there was the ex-racers and pros saying, hang on, we all do that.
Yes,
everyone's
all the
doing
time.
That.
You go for a toilet break? Like, I'm not some roadie pro. I've had very limited experience. You go for a toilet break, you work up through the bunch. And you play it sensible. Like, if you're getting dropped off the back, for instance, if you're getting dropped off the back of the peloton, there's no point killing yourself 15 metres back. The amount of people you see at the back that yo-yo, accidentally go back to the team car and then can work their way up the...
Yeah.
You know, it happens all the time. And it is such a... With all this thing that's going on, you know, I think a year or two ago, there was Roglic who was basically being paced by the motorbikes.
Yeah, right.
And that, you know, GCN did a really cool video about how much effect that has. And it's something that everyone benefits from. And I'm not saying the rules shouldn't be enforced, but come on.
It's, you know, UCI and rules, there's always going to be a lot of argument.
Mm-hmm.
You could say people could potentially fake a crash to get then a tow back to the peloton. But
okay, how often do you think they need to be working on seat clamps? How often do you think they fail? But the reason the mechanics are always working on seat clamps is because that's the most secure place to hold
the bike.
Well, they need to change a saddle. Like, come on, they're not changing anything.
The seat clamps.
Yeah.
It has happened. Do you remember Steve Pete's saddle fell off at that World Champs Fort William? Was it World Cup final?
Yeah, and he carried
his
on.
His saddle just fell off. Like, what? I can't remember who his mechanic was.
And if I saw a concierge leaning outside of the side of a car, I would be saying the same thing. How could it happen? You know? But it seemed, I don't know, it just seems, obviously rules need to be enforced. And I'm somebody that usually, actually, without sounding too much like an agent of the powers that be, I'm usually actually quite a stickler to rules. You know, I'm usually like, actually, well, we all read them. But I think what annoys me is everybody's flouting them. So disqualify everyone. You know, it's like Lance Armstrong when he was doping.
Yeah.
No, those ones didn't happen.
Or was it the World Championships Athletics at the weekend as well? The guy, I'm very vague on this. Didn't the guy who win missed
three drug tests?
But he was also, the guy who came second has been done for doping in the past.
Yeah. So it's like, to be fair, I'm like that with dentist appointments. So, you know. Bloody hell!
But it was a weekend on the cycling side for Rainbow Stripes. Unfortunately, Matthew Van Der Poel didn't win the road race. I was looking, because he's a mountain biker. I was hoping for that.
But it's the first time I've ever seen him, like, sort of get into the right position. I mean, I don't watch cyclocross or anything like that, so I'm sure there's been many times, but we're so used to seeing him on cross-country World Cups
just
get into the right position, and then it's just like, sorry, whoever else is there.
Yeah.
He's going to do it.
Apparently, he said this is the first time it's ever happened where he just literally, like, bonks, just ran out. Mm. He got to the one point, he's like, I can't pedal anymore. Done. Mm. Don't know what's happened, but it's gone wrong.
Yeah. It looked gnarly. Absolutely gnarly.
Anyway, on to what we're really here to talk about, and that is the Bluegrass Trophy of Nations powered by SRAM, which is the first ever time in Enduro's fairly short history that rainbow stripes and world championships have been given out. Mm-hmm. So it's a big event.
It was, but I think it was cool. It's good to see them do something a bit different. However, I think it was also perhaps, maybe there's an element of sort of like counterintuitive to what people understand. I think even going into the race, everyone was like, so what?
So it is definitely a different format for this. It's not like a cross-country or downhill world champs where the one rider takes a jersey. Mm-hmm. In this case, it's a nations event. So the three best ranked riders from each nation mm-hmm. were part of that national team. The 24 nations there. And the winning team, the win made up of all three riders' times from mm-hmm. the five stages, so 15 times, fastest team gets the stripes.
I think it is pretty cool. I think the only thing that I would say, and this is kind of playing devil's avocado, but just the only slight, not criticism, but to me, mountain biking, similar to say Formula One, is a team sport anyway. Do you know what I mean? There's so much that goes into it behind the scenes that to be like, oh, we're going to make it a team sport. It's kind of like, well, it kind of sort of is. For the big teams anyway, they put so much into it. Maybe for the privateers, not so much.
Coming into this, I mean, I've ridden motocross a lot in the past, big enduro and motocross fan and trials as well, actually. And they have trophy designations, motocross designations.
Yes, yes.
And it's the same kind of thing, slightly different, but in the motocross world, it's got lots of history. It is really well-renowned. Mm-hmm. It's by no means a world championship, but it is the one thing that all the nations want to win. It gets super, you know, national pride is on stake here. But it's different. They've got three races, three riders, different size bikes for the most part. Mm-hmm. And all riders pretty much race each other. And you drop the worst, as far as I remember, you drop the worst result, the worst rider result from each race. So if somebody still wins, you know, your Ricky Carmichael, going back a few years here, can win two races, but he isn't the champion. America are the champion if their other two riders play the part as well.
Yeah.
In this case, Enduro does Trophy of Nations for Enduro. The three riders, all their times are added up. But it was a bit weird how they did it for me, where they dropped in behind each other. I'm not totally clear on this. I don't know if they could give a big gap or not. They were saying that they could sort of choose, you know, to go straight in or 20 seconds, but could they leave it 5 minutes? I don't know how exactly it was.
I think my understanding of it was they had a minute allotted as a start time.
Okay, right.
And then each rider could have their own start time within that.
Yeah.
So you could send your slowest rider off first and hope the fastest person wouldn't catch. But I think a lot of people were doing it the other way around, where they were hoping the faster of the three riders, although probably quite marginally at that level, would tow the other ones along.
Well, we definitely saw a different... You've got a feel for people like Martin Mays. Mm-hmm. Belgium's, you know, got some good riders, but Martin is head and shoulders above the rest of them. Whereas you look at USA, it's got Cody Kelly, Sean Neer, Richie Rude. Obviously, Richie Rude's super fast. Australia, Josh Carlson, Conor Fear and Sam Hill.
That's what I thought they were going to get it.
You think you chuck Sam Hill at the front, I'll try and follow you, Sam. Although, to me, you think... I don't know if they did do that every stage, but Sam Hill would be an incredibly hard rider to follow, even if you are Josh Carlson, who's a great rider, but two very different styles of riding.
Yeah, but I think, you know, you look at the team of those three, and it's not to, you know, obviously Rude, probably going to go down as one of the greatest ever, you know, especially a pioneering enduro rider. Neer's been top 10. I think Kelly's probably top 10, top 20 in the past.
He has had top 10s, yeah.
Yeah, but then you look at the Australian team and had Carlson, who... arguably should have won an EWS a couple of years back in Canada.
Yeah,
he podiumed there the next year.
He beat me in a video not so long ago.
I mean, well, I'm surprised they didn't win, quite frankly. can he get that on his jersey? Is he going to get like a Neil Donoghue strike?
Yes, right.
then you've got Conor Fearon, who obviously, yet again, should, had it not been for the cool twist of fate of Aaron Gwynn snapping his chain and somehow pulling it out of the bag.
More flat paddle thunder, actually, Fearon.
And, you know, he's been winning cross-country. Right, sorry, he won like the Victoria Enduro at the start of this year on a hardtail.
Oh, yeah.
He also came second or third at one of the Enduro World Series.
He did. He showed up and
you
did
know,
really well.
And then Sam Hill, and, you know, nothing needs to be said about what he can do. And I thought, whoa, that's got all the bases covered.
However, look at the French team. You have got 2, 3, and 4 in the overall.
Yeah.
Nicolai Tordeau and... I've forgotten.
Kevin
Miguel, who actually did not race because he broke his hand. But their fill-in for the race was Adrian Day. He was fifth overall.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Adrian Day, he really flies under the radar, eh?
He sort of had a bit of off time, didn't he, with his massive elbow injury. So he kind of came back. I can't remember. He definitely came back to the podium, but it's been a bit hit and miss.
I mean, even he, you know, doing so well in the overall, but, you know, he's not someone that you think... I don't know. Maybe it's because... I don't know why it is, but even when he was on that rise, he did kind of have that... He still wasn't getting that much coverage.
Yeah.
And he is such a fantastic rider. I remember watching him from in Madeira and stuff like that, and he was just amazing. And he seems to be a real product of that French style.
Yeah, you know? Young French rider.
His personality is just quiet. And
fairly quiet, yeah. Mm-hmm. Nicolas Vuillot helps him out with, obviously, rides for Lapierre. I'm sure Nico helps out with his riding and training as well.
But he's also, I'm pretty sure, because when he just came out of the juniors and was absolutely smashing it, and he had that amazing year with Sam Hill, was it 2 years ago?
Yeah.
Where they're both doing it. But he's actually older than Martin Mace.
Yeah.
Because Martin Mace never did the junior thing.
Martin's been around for a while, yeah.
Yeah, he's been around for he's done his paper around, eh?
Yeah. So 24 nations, even a team from Korea.
Mm-hmm.
On the women's side, the French team, it's a bit of a tale of two countries, really. France versus UK. It's Pugin, Morgan Sharp, and Couturier. Obviously, he's won everything this year.
Yeah.
Then Katie Winton, Bex Brona, and Nicole Cook. Not Nicole Cook, what's her name?
I say, she's really branched out.
Yeah. Becky Cook, who is a trials rider, and I'm pretty sure she's done trials designations for the British team, so she knows how those sort of things kind of work. It took place in Finale Liguria, a great place for it. It is sort of the spiritual home of Enduro.
Yeah.
Did you see the opening ceremony going down in town?
I did. I love the way they designated a bar.
Yes.
And they said, it's like the Olympics. Like, you don't see Usain Bolt knocking back tequila at 3 a.m.
So each nation had their own bar in town. What a good idea that is.
I thought that was so cool. Yeah, and also, like, you know, I think it was cool to see how accessible mountain biking is.
Yeah.
And then more play on that, be like, right, they're going to be at this bar. Do you know what I mean?
Say,
just go down, have a good time.
Judging by Instagram, you could definitely find the Kiwi team at their bar.
Yeah, but they had, you know, Ed Bullhouse Media on the case, didn't they?
Yes. Ed Masters injured, can't ride, but definitely helping that team out.
Yeah.
Their under 21 team did well, actually, yeah. So, I think the difficult thing about this is obviously you've got three bikes, three riders, and five tough stages. Although they did say they made the stages slightly less tech, or picked slightly less tech stages for that case, because it's going to be tough to get all those people through.
Yeah.
In fact, we saw it with the French team. Unfortunately, who was it, Tordo? Or was it Nicolai, I believe, actually punctured on the first stage.
Yeah.
And that's it, done.
But I remember, I watched an interview, it was actually part of the EWS coverage with the Canadian Werner, and he was saying how everything is so well built there. You know, there's some places where you almost don't trust the building.
Yeah.
And you're like, you'd be riding something that's really mellow and be like, oh, I'm just going to, and then you turn around, come around a corner and it just switches.
I suppose.
He said that the building was good enough there that you could hit everything flat out and you knew that it was going to be kind of in the right tone of the trail.
Although, all the riders know the men's DH very well because they've all raced it for years. But that is one sort of tale of two stories. It's super mellow at the top.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think they fixed up the bottom this year by the looks of it and by the comments the riders are making, but it's rough and gnarly at the bottom.
Mm-hmm. Is it somewhere you enjoy riding?
Not that one, no.
No.
The rest, nine, you know, everything else in Finale is brilliant. Mm-hmm. And I've ridden probably a tenth of the stuff there.
Yeah.
Men's DH is pretty horrible at the bottom. Nice at the top. But the crowd is crazy. So I raced it last year, much lower down the, you know, the pecking order. So the crowd builds for the last riders, but it's still a brilliant feeling to bomb down the end of that.
Because something, you know, I think this, what's really cool for this is as a spectator, I think it's a really cool event.
Yeah.
We also saw, you know, fair play to the people of Harrogate in Yorkshire lining the course, you know, a couple of people deep pretty much the whole way. As an athlete, when you were competing at that kind of top level, was it helpful having somebody in a, like, you know, in a gimp suit screaming in your face?
I used to love it. Yeah, I mean,
I'm not surprised that you did.
My experience with that is racing World Cup downhill, and I remember going to Japan in 2000, and I went there two or three times in a row. Only went there once, but it was like the only chance for Japanese people to see professional mountain bike racing, and it was massive. There was like, I remember it being five people deep the whole way down and 20 people deep at the bottom. Mm-hmm. And it was incredible. And it's absolutely amazing. Love it.
Mm-hmm.
I raced the world champs at Leger, a sixth rider you know, to go, five riders after me. So everyone's at the bottom of the course, which is a weird thing, because normally at World Cup, you'll have quite a lot of people coming all the way down. But it's when you're later on in the pecking order, everyone sort of goes to the bottom. So there's just nothing. And then thousands of people at the bottom, and it's bonkers.
And would it help you kind of, you know, turn your brain off with the crowds? Like, just to be like, imagine it gets the adrenaline pumping.
Definitely hypes you up. I think you probably ride harder than you would without them. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's definitely a cool experience.
I think it's pretty cool. I don't know if I'd cope so well with it. I'm quite a leave me alone and let me do my business. I remember one time I was coming back from the road I used to live on top of was about 20%. And so it's like out of road gearing, it's horrible. And it was probably that was pinched at 20%, but it was about 3K long, and it was quite a long climb. You know, and regularly, and I'm not proud of this, but it's pretty funny. I'd come back from when I was trying to train a lot, do say a 250K road ride, including intervals, and then finish with the bunch ride. And then you're coming home and there's somebody that's not, maybe they're a cyclist, but they're probably not that passionate they're riding, and you're absolutely broken. They're like, come on, you can do it, dig in. And you're just flipping the bird. leave me alone. I'm absolutely broken. Stop shouting in my face. And I just saw that imagine being in that last group, you're absolutely dead. And then you've got someone dig a little deeper. It's like, I'm bloody trying. I just don't know how well I'd cope with that. I see it in the Tour de France and it makes me quite anxious.
I raced Fort William World Champs. When was that? 2007? Back in the skin suit days. And I'd already crashed once. So I've crashed every World Champs I've ever raced. Because I always ride far too hard. And anyway, I really embarrassingly got a massive buck on the jump, the Tito. Was it the old Visit Scotland Arch jump?
Yes, I know exactly what you mean.
And I got a massive bike, where Martin Mayes crashed. And I buzzed my peak on my front wheel in a skin suit, rode it out.
When you say your peak, you refer it?
My helmet.
Oh, okay, yes, right.
And everyone at the end was like, oh, I can't believe that, that's crazy. And I was like, I couldn't give I'd already crashed. My heart rate was the highest it's ever been. I was I just wanted it to be over. Couldn't care less if it was at the finish line or a massive crash. I just wanted it to be over. So my emotions you almost crashed. I don't care. I just wanted it to stop. One way or the other. It was quite embarrassing though, I suppose.
Oh, it is what it is. It is what it is.
Anyway, a lot of tough stages to get through, a lot of potential mechanicals at the race, and we saw it actually, luckily for Adrian Day, who's at the end of the very last stage, he did a massive huck and his carbon wheel totally exploded.
Has that happened with carbon wheels before?
It has, yes. Can't name names, but yes, it does. And you've got to get back to town from there as well. So, Jack, you were saying you saw a picture of him sat on one of the guys' bars.
Yeah, Nikolai's bars.
It's a long way back to town from there.
Well, thank God for wide bars, eh?
Yeah. Who's carrying the bike? But what I did think was when the French guy, Nikolai, punctured, it's a good way to get a bit of help fixing a puncture, isn't it? When you're on a team. There's two other guys, they're really going to try and help you fix that puncture.
Well, I remember hearing it was actually when I was working, I just did worked in Rotorua for Chain Reaction Nuke Proof, and there was that thing where Martin Mace, I think, helping Sam with the puncture the season before.
Yeah,
and we got talking about it, and JC, who's Sam Hill's mechanic, was saying that Martin so desperately wants to win, but he wants to win in the fairest way possible.
Yeah, I can imagine that.
And he was just like, I don't want to beat Sam Hill like this.
Yeah,
I'm going to help him. And I think that's super cool. Which super is humble and
ironic
amazing.
When you think of this year's happenings with Martin getting done, which I think almost everyone thinks is unfair, but nevertheless, he lost two races because of it.
But what I don't understand about that is, what frustrates me with him losing those two races, and without going into the nuanced world of, anti-doping legislation, who won those EWSs? Yeah. It doesn't, but we didn't, nothing.
Keegan, right?
But he didn't, though. He didn't. It was just in second place, the first person down the hill. And that's really, I think that is sad, because I think if it's a legitimate penalty, then there should still be a winner.
Yeah.
But it's almost kind of watering down and not following through with the strength of their convictions to be like, nobody won because we're not actually, we feel a bit guilt, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that would change the overall for those riders.
I mean, it's happened with Lance Armstrong, etc.
I think that's the thing. I think it's very different.
Yeah.
And for all the other ones, you do still get a winner. And whether it's, you know, you're forgetful with the dentist appointments and doping infringement, you know, tests, or you're, you know, straight lining into your eyeballs, I think it's really sad that the next most honest rider didn't
yeah.
benefit from their hard work. Because someone like, you know, what's he, Kiwi guy, Keegan Wright.
Yeah.
Like, he, the way his season went, those extra points might have put him a few positions up in the overall.
Mm.
You know, maybe it's contract time for him, I don't know, but do you know what I mean? And actually it's going to, because they didn't want to say, this is the absolute line, I think he either finished second or he won.
Yeah.
To me.
A tough one. I read a really good thing, I think I was on Pink Bike a few weeks ago, with Gary Houseman, who won the Grouse Mountain World Cup downhill.
Fantastic. That was a great article, actually.
Yeah, it was really cool. But it was, that was a weird race, because it was one of those where it was before the times where the UCI messed around with protected riders and putting them before the top qualifiers, just in the running order. So it was a time when the weather did affect the results quite often, and it did at that race. And yeah, the top riders got rained on heavily, so they didn't get anywhere near the top. So Gary Houseman won the race. Fair enough, he rode the fastest in the conditions that he was faced with, but it was sort of raining when he went down. Ivan Allego Moreno came second. I think Stu Thompson was third, fourth, or fifth. Can't remember, definitely on the podium. But when Gary Houseman got when he won the race, he knew he was going to get busted, because his teammate, Johnny Waddell, had hurt himself,
had
a joint after that race. So a week later, he won the race. He's like, oh, cool, I've won the race, but I'm definitely going to get tested, and I'm definitely going to fail this test.
Yeah.
So he got that got taken away from him, obviously. But it was sort of a race that he normally probably wouldn't have won anyway, and then he got taken away from him. But it's a brilliant article.
It was actually a very good article. There was one thing I really liked. He said, to win a national, I think you've got to be scared once or twice. Yeah. To win a something, but to win a World Cup race, you've got to be scared six or seven times. And it was just a cool way of, you know.
Yeah.
It reminds me of a Loic Bruni thing when he said at the top of, like, after he'd won in Andorra, he was like, because the pits were at the top, he was like, yeah, I saw the time I had to beat and I knew I was going to have to be scared.
Yeah.
And it was just such like a pure way of thinking about it.
Well, you look at Pirion and he obviously is in the moment, but he must look back and think, whoa, that was scary.
Yeah. Yeah. He tried to copy your move at Fort Bill, the old peak bus.
I watched that again.
So much style.
Yeah. So what about, Henry, talk us through some of the tech from this race. I guess this is the first time we've ever had Trophy of Nations, so maybe in the next few years people will get fully into it with jerseys and bikes and get really on board, as we see with the World Cup races at World Champs time.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised not to see more people get at least on the jersey train. I think you saw the Canyon guys in nice French jerseys and people with certain highlights, but then you saw, like, you know, the Aussie team, where two of them were in, I think, Fearon and Carlson were in Aussie jerseys. And then,
I don't know what the rules are. I'm guessing a lot of them just ride trade jerseys.
Yeah, and I think, like, don't get me wrong, I think it's just, I think it took a couple of years for it to really take a hold in the World Champs downhill, where manufacturers realised it was just free advertising if they did limited edition stuff. Cool. But no, the bike's really cool. I mean, Kona really knocked it out of the park.
That's some, like, the retro ones. I mean, they're like the old stinkies.
The old stinky, and it just looked
fantastic.
It looked really, really cool. Miranda Miller's as well looked like an absolute work of art. Nuke Proof went for the Ferrari-inspired route. And actually,
in Italy?
Yeah, I think actually they pulled it off. Like, I think if you said, we're going to do some Ferrari, like, you know, whenever it's like a Ferrari bike, it's normally like a Walmart bike that someone slapped a badge on and it's a bit dodgy. Right. But actually, they looked fantastic. Even the handguards and everything, it was so...
Yeah.
I know, I thought it was super cool.
We saw a Fox 38 as well. Was that just on Richie Roux's bike, or was there more than one pair out there?
I'm not so sure. I mean,
Martin Mays had one.
Yeah. He's riding a new GT29er bollocks, I think.
Yeah, well, it was the one that came out recently. I can't remember its name. But yeah, the Fox 38, which looks, I suppose, with these 29ers that get increasingly long travel, you know, we were talking about it on the tech show, and it's, you know, I think for me, a couple of years ago, if somebody had shown me, especially the things they were racing in the last couple of rounds, the EWS, which is so tight, you know, so like janky, you know, as they call it.
Yeah.
And they said, people are going to be riding this on 180mm 29ers. I'd have been like, oh, come on, don't be silly. Of course they're not. They're going to, but they're obviously doing it really, really well. And I think the Fox 38...
Well, it sits right between 36 and a 40,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah, so that's indeed what it is.
Mini downhill Enduro 4, basically. 180, you'd think.
Have you got any 36s on any of your bikes? Lyrics, eh?
No, yeah, I think I've got Lyric on my Mega and Lyric on my Strive. So it's been a little while since I've ridden a 36, actually.
And would you...
36 is brilliant.
36 is a brilliant fork.
As are Lyrics, to be fair. I don't feel like I would want any more, but then I'm not the size of Richie Rude smashing a bike down pretty rocky trails.
He looks at a wheel wrong and it will tack up, you know? Yeah, totally. But I think it is really interesting seeing bikes coming, you know, like I said, 180mm 29er.
Yeah.
It seemed even a few years ago like a ridiculous concept.
Yeah.
But now, a 38, I mean, it would seem, it would make sense, I suppose.
Would you fancy trying to follow Richie Rude down one of those stages, knowing that his pride is in your hands, because if you mess up, then the team messes up?
Honestly, I think what's amazing about Richie Rude is, and I think he went through a stage of it maybe two seasons ago, he was constantly breaking wheels.
Yeah.
Constantly puncturing or breaking wheels. And it's because he hits lines so committed. And I think a lot of riders, you know, they always say like main line with confidence, whatever. But Richie Rude, whatever, he seems to be just to be such a fiercely strong rider that he knows he can make most lines work. If it's really rough, he just goes, okay, fine.
Chris Kavaric back in the day was a bit like that. I don't think this is a sort of an urban myth, but it was like... I think it's probably come from Pagey, who was his team manager. He was like, Chris Kavaric, he doesn't have lines, he just rides hard. And wherever he ends up, he ends up. Mm. So you think you practice a World Cup 3 days and he doesn't pick a line. You're just like, got it, it's fine. Yeah. Watch this, go wherever I want.
Yeah, you make him sound like Pac-Man.
And they look like, beep, beep, beep. Similar builds. In fact, Kavaric's probably bigger than Richie Rude.
I would love to see Richie Rude
fight Chris Kavaric.
Yes. Well, that wasn't what I was going to say, but actually you're right, that's what I do want to see. I was going to say I'd love to see him do a Martin Mace, swing a leg over a downhill bike.
Well, he was junior world champion.
He was, yeah.
Yeah, it's been a while though.
And also I think, you know, with this 38 fork, you know, so much of the limitation in forks is, to my understanding of it anyway, is, you know, there's a huge amount of chassis flex.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, that's why you go to a larger diameter. Wouldn't it be cool to see I can't believe I'm saying this because people are going to understandably, you know, I hope they're not eating whilst I'm in this, but like, you know, a triple clamp set or a double clamp setup.
Yeah.
38.
38, yeah.
You know, like I spoke to Chris Porter and he was saying, you know, we basically had some of those offset crowns, those morks.
Yeah.
Measured the diameter and it was 36.
Oh, right.
It's to give more options for trail bikers because it's actually a relatively small weight penalty.
Hmm.
It's not that much. And for bigger riders or on e-bikes or whatever, it can give huge benefits in terms of stiffness. And then you get adjustable fork offset.
Right. Wow, that would be really interesting, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Because he was also saying, quite interestingly, that with...
So you could run an enduro bike and swap crowns between races rather than change the whole fork.
The mork, you can change the offset. It's got like two flip chips.
Yeah.
So you basically have like four different offset options from just one one crown.
Wow, that would be really cool.
Super cool. And I think it's such a cool way for, you know, it's sometimes I feel almost a bit kind of out of touch when I'm on the tech show or something and I'm like, oh, well, we'll just change the offset. And that's a huge expense.
Right.
I feel a bit silly even saying it because it's such a huge... It's either a Pandora's box to go down and perhaps you might not even find anything you like. But what would be cool is if you had something like that, it's a relatively inexpensive way to try lots of different tech.
I remember the Astons, what bike? That would have been the GT, I think they were helping develop, trying all sorts
bike, that one. Beautiful.
They're trying to get the length of the frame right and work out the offset. And I seem to remember there being, you know, so many different combinations. And in the end, they went back to what they had, I think, or something crazy, where just so many different things you can play around with. And even with chassis, you can talk about getting stiffer fork, but it all works together. If you then stick a really stiff carbon rim, stiffer isn't always better. You want to find the flex in a certain spot. So if you're changing a fork, it quite often means you might actually want to change something else on the bike as well.
I think the issue with the forks, though, is that when you get kind of like, you know, sort of the wheel flexing underneath you, parallel to the bike, that's one thing. But the issue is when you have it in cornering, it's basically the way the parallelogram twists is it's basically, I have been told, this isn't my own thing, but the issue is that you're basically going from it twisting one way, which goes onto the spring, then it twists the other way and it goes onto the compression circuit.
Damping.
And it's actually never using both simultaneously.
Right, okay.
So,
and as that's happening, your wheel is doing a bit of this as well.
Yeah, totally. So it's actually about providing something consistent, and you need something for that consistency. You need a stiffer chassis. But the other issue is, you know, on Fox's performance thing, you can get your, you know, your bushes reamed out just because it's that's the probably the biggest thing.
To just less friction inside the fork. Yeah.
Yeah, bring maybe Cannondale onto something.
What with a lefty?
Lefty needle bearings.
Who knows? I mean, that fork that Doddy's got on, what's it called? The Faith Truth? What's it called?
Trust.
That's it. I knew something like that.
Yeah.
That's a crazy looking fork, which is completely different.
They seem to have gone down, like, you know, the sort of more American, you know, you name your kid Hope as it's a virtue like they'd like to have, or Grace. It's like that. Next is going to be the one motion, whatever it is, Dignity, or whatever. It's a really, it's a funny way to name a fork, but hey, Hope.
On to the results. So it was in the women's race. It was really between the British team and the French team. French, obviously, always strong at Enduro. But the Brits were winning till up to stage four by, I think, 6 seconds. But then the French came back strong. But actually, they suffered a bit of drama because Melanie Poggin snapped her rear mech on the final stage. So that must have been a tough one to try and get it home.
Yeah, I mean, imagine what was going through your head there, you know, hearing it round, flailing around. It must have been... Oh, tense.
Yeah, I've definitely done it. I've raced and got to the bottom with it okay, and I have raced and stuck a rear mech into the back wheel, and then it's an expensive job. And your race is over.
Yeah.
But yeah, the French took the win by, what was it, only 8 seconds, I think. In the men's race, you've got Team USA, took the win.
Yeah.
Richie Rude towed the boys in. Sean Neer is an incredibly fast rider as well, of course, and as is Cody Kelly, but Neer's had a brilliant year. And they won three of the stages. Team Sweden came second. Didn't win any stages, but they were pretty consistent. They had a second and a fifth, and a fourth. Robin Wallen's on the team, Zacharias Johansson.
Just a note about that USA team.
Yep.
You know, I think you sometimes do get teams or setups which are very good at developing talent. All of those are ex-Yeti riders.
Yeah, true.
Jared Graves, Yeti rider.
Yeti have been great over the years for doing it.
But Neer, you know, seems to have really been, I don't know if it'd be fair to say, probably not to, obviously he's an incredible talent, but seems to be really nurtured in terms of his results. It kind of appears that way.
Definitely.
And, you know, just having a good setup. Obviously the bikes are great. They run really well. And but I just think that's such a, it's such a nice thing to see everyone got to come, Cody Kelly come back together as well.
Yeah. He's had an up and down season. I did look, I've forgotten already, but I don't know. He's had a seventh at North Star, but the rest are 24, 33, 52. So not brilliant, especially by his standards.
But yeah, he seems like a bit. I mean, one time he was in Queenstown, he's in the shop I was working in, and he dropped a helmet. And no one even saw him drop the helmet, but he was just like, and it cracked it.
Whoa.
And he just like was like, well, I'll have to buy it. And we were like, we'll see what we can do. He's like, no, I insist. Like, don't worry about
it. No way.
Like, super nice guy.
Yeah, that's cool. Team Canada third with the teammates of Melamed and Remy Govan with Werner. Good ride for them. And then actually they see New Zealand, Belgium. Obviously Martin Mays is the strong rider for them. The Aussies came sixth. They won stage two. I'm not quite sure. I think apparently Samuel suffered a bit on the pedaling. So whether or not he's in off-season mode already, I would probably expect if he just won.
Just pizza and beers.
I'm sure I saw a picture of him with a beer on that.
Actually two of them, Carlson and Samuel had beers. Or stubby somethings at least. The French down 11th, with puncture on stage one. That was the 21st. The rest of it, well, they had a second, a fourth, sixth and a second. So... yeah, that cost them dear, that one race.
It's been a torrid couple of weeks for Nikolai.
You've got Team Korea, Team Czech, Team Poland, Slovakia, all sorts of Brazil you've got.
Super cool.
Yeah, good to see, isn't it?
Are they going to do it in finale every year, do you think?
I don't know. I kind of hope they do, because that
seems to suit it. Surely it's the next.
I mean, finale is a brilliant place, especially for an end-of-year race. Just the whole vibes of the place, the ice creams, the all that stuff. It's a cool place to go and ride. And as a spectator, go and ride watch the race is pretty amazing. So that was it for the first ever Trophy of Nations. What seemed to me a little bit of a weird sort of setup, actually, I think really worked. And with the riders, it seemed really popular.
Yeah, perhaps the thing I didn't really completely get my head around. Not... the industry race, because it almost seemed to, I thought it would be like, you had to sign up your team months in advance. But you saw reserve riders dropping in and out. I suppose it gave them something to do anyway.
Yeah, true.
But they're kind of, you know, the Expendables of the mountain bike world.
Well, we look at
Barrel
the names.
And Clements. What? And they would have placed...
Lykanen.
I don't know what they would have placed in the actual overall, but it was ninth.
They would have beaten the actual French
That's
team.
That's amazing.
Yeah, interesting. I think that one kind of blurs the lines a bit too much for me. I'd rather see just all the fastest riders somehow race it. But
I thought when it was industry teams, you'd have to be on their payroll.
Yeah,
so like
ideally.
Like GMBN, because we could have just said...
Well, we talked about it.
We did talk about it, yeah. But you know, you started talking about how many mechs we're going to send into Wheels, and I knew that'd yeah. be my Saturday night taken care of. So no, but you know what I mean? Like you could just... I'm supposed in the same way, but it makes like a race team, and I thought it was going to be... When I saw that they were doing an industry thing, I thought... How cool that's going to be for, say, Maxis or
well,
whoever.
People, the GT team took it seriously. You got Mark Morrison, yeah. Those guys. They look like they're having a good time there.
They did indeed, yeah. But no, I just think it should be, yeah, on the payroll. I was expecting to have to take an invoice, like a payslip.
Well, we talked about it. We talked about GMBM versus Pink Bike. But actually, like you say, you can no guest riders. It's you've got to be a full-time employee. Mm-hmm. Let's do it. Let's do it. Next year.
Yeah.
And what does it mean next year? Will we see these three racers, Cody Kelly, Sean Neer, and Richie Rude, in rainbow jerseys next year?
I think they all racing. Given them, didn't they?
Mm. But will they all race in a trade rainbow stripes? I'm not sure. Mm. But
it'll be cool to see.
Can't wait to see what happens next year with it all. But that's it. That is pretty much the end of the year for racing main bikes, I
it's
think,
been
isn't it?
Absolutely stellar season.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
The podcast will go on to different things. We'll hopefully catch up with some pro riders, interesting industry people, all sorts of different people in the next coming weeks and months. So I hope you've enjoyed it. Catch it as you can every week on Spotify, iTunes, Deezer, and Audio Boom. Right, catch you there.